Hey, everybody. Welcome back to ATL Developments with Jeff Smith, recording from the Business Radio X studios inside a Renaissance Bank here in Alpharetta. We're off of Windward Parkway, where we talk about all things economic development through the metro Atlanta area. I'm a mortgage banker with Assurance Financial, and if you need a loan, please always feel free to reach out. I write a weekly column that goes out in a newsletter and is run on the business pages of the Herald newspapers throughout North Fulton and Forsyth counties. If you want to get on my newsletter list or have questions about a mortgage, please email me at gsmith@assurancemortgage.com. That's G as in Georgia, Smith at Assurance, A-S-S-U-R-A-N-C-E, mortgage.com. We talk a lot on this show about things that drive Atlanta's economy and keep people from all over the world moving here every single day, and really to the tune of over 70,000 people a year, which if you do the math, that's about 190 people a day, which reminds me that I should be doing a whole lot more mortgages than I'm doing. Growth in the Atlanta has been heavy for decades, and our metro leaders have continued to improve the climate for doing business here in Atlanta. And Georgia, really. In fact, Georgia was just named again for, I think, the fifth, sixth, maybe the seventh year in a row, the best state to do business in the country. With such a diverse economy that has footholds in several key growing industries, it's obvious that companies and people will continue to move here. In fact, we had Atlanta Regional Commission Chair Carrie Armstrong on the show a couple months ago, and he said that they're predicting over 2.5 million people will move here in the next 20 years. Which is about the size of taking Charlotte, North Carolina, and sticking it here in the metro Atlanta area. So needless to say, a lot has happened in the metro area here over the last 50 years, and few people have had the kind of perspective that today's guest has had. Frank Norton Jr. is the third generation of Norton. Frank, correct me if I get any of this wrong, please.
Sure.
Is the third generation of Norton's leading the Norton Agency, a mostly real estate company that first got into the industry by building a neighborhood in Gainesville in 1937. Since then, they've grown to become a behemoth in the North Georgia real estate market. While they do seem to do some business inside the metro area, most of their properties, both commercial and residential, are what I would call on the other side of the Rubicon, doing most of their business north of Forsyth, Gwinnett, and Cherokee counties. I first met Frank about 20 years ago. He used to and still does put on an annual forecasting event. For those that do not know him or of him, he is a Georgia Tech grad with a tenacious work ethic and a never-ending appetite for data and information. His annual forecasts were and still are a sight to see. My first one, I think, was in a warehouse that was packed with people. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think there was a smoke machine. And then out comes Frank Norton. Doesn't seem like the smoke machine kind of guy with lasers and all that, but came out and it was really all about the information. I was expecting big things and he delivered. I get information from people all the time, and there are a lot of folks who are really great at disseminating data and telling us what's going on right now and in the markets. There are very few people who actually take that data and turn it into actionable information predicting what will happen in the future. And of those few, I really don't know many, if any, that have been as spot on as Frank Jr. over the last 20, 30 years. So I saw him again at a homeowner's show in Forsyth County, and I'll get to him in a second here. But it was really 5 years removed from the recession. The real estate market was starting to hum, and really it was propping up the recovery in a lot of ways. There wasn't as much fanfare on this event, but the information was just as big. He predicted that inventory levels at that time, especially in the lower-priced housing markets, were going to go towards zero. I think the title of your show was, "What Will You Do When Inventory Hits Zero?" And we all looked at you kind of like, what's this guy talking about? But a year later, we found out he was right on the money, as inventory levels, even today, for houses under 300,000 are close to 1 to 2 months. So one of my favorite quotes from him from that presentation was, "We used to look at the obituary for listings, but now we're checking the church bulletins to see who's sick." I thought it was great.
I attributed that to somebody else. I did not say that.
Well, you probably
did. Repeat it.
Hey, some of my best jokes are stolen from somebody else, so right. I appreciate you passing on the information. So without further ado, I would like to introduce to you, ladies and gentlemen, Frank Norton Jr. Frank, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Wow, that's a mouthful that you've just expressed.
Well, I've been a fan of yours for a long time, and, you know, to be honest, you know, what we always do on this show, because Atlanta is such a melting pot, there's people, I people here from all over the Metroland area always ask where they're from. It's always fun to hear about where they grew up. You are a native, and so why don't you tell us a little bit about where you're born and raised and everything else?
So I was born in Gainesville, Georgia. Have an interesting perspective in that my mother's Cuban.
Okay.
And she was an exchange student or a foreign student at Brunel University. She met one of the only three single people in Gainesville, Georgia, men at the time, and married my dad and ended up being a teacher at Brunel University. And so I have deep roots, but I have also an international roots because I've visited Cuba a couple of times, South America, and I have an interesting broader perspective, having been in a second generation American.
Right.
But I do belong. My brother and I do own a real estate company based in Gainesville, Georgia.
Yeah. What was Gainesville? I mean, we're talking. I don't want to age you too much, but what was Gainesville like? What was it like growing up in Gainesville?
Gainesville was Mayberry.
Yeah.
It was an hour and a half from Atlanta because there were no freeways to Gainesville. It wasn't until 1964 when 85 was built. 72, the outer perimeter, Northern Arc, was built. It wasn't until about 78 that 400 came up to the other side of the lake. It was a lake community, but it was a small agricultural-based community where everybody knew everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
I walked to elementary school both ways uphill in
Yeah,
snow,
right.
But I did walk to school in a community that everybody did know you. You played in the streets. And I remember one of the great things is there was a gentleman two doors down named DeBeecher Ward, and he would he'd be the Pied Piper. He would have everybody out on Friday nights in the line in the middle of the neighborhood street, 50 kids looking for UFOs.
Okay.
And then take us all –
yeah.
March us four or five That's blocks great. To the Dairy Queen and buy us all a cone. So it was that Mayberry good wholesomeness. My dad and mom both worked in the business. When I went off to college in 1974, that does date me, there were 17 people in the business. The business was founded by my grandfather 91 years ago.
Right.
And now my brother and I are third generation, and we have fourth generation in the business. And it certainly has exponentially grown. We have 19 offices across two states.
Sure, absolutely.
And today we are the largest privately owned insurance real estate company in the state of Georgia.
Okay. Now that I saw that as one of the tabs, but I know you as a real estate. Everybody that drives around North Georgia sees the big yellow signs.
You either see the little yellow signs or the big yellow signs. And during during their session, while we did make a little money, the really only person making a lot of money was our sign company.
Right. And so, well, on the insurance, so what kind of insurance?
So we do property casualty.
Sure.
Property casualty is about half the business in commercial lines. We have a private label insurance business. People know us in the Atlanta market as HN Insurance. That's our Harry Norman partner.
Sure.
Atlanta Fine Homes Insurance. That is Atlanta Fine Homes. We have partnerships with Metro Brokers and a number of others, REMAX executives. And so we have a private label insurance business that we run, as well as a national platform selling insurance for rental houses.
So that's interesting because you are a real estate company. You're also an insurance company, but you also are selling insurance to other real estate companies.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And we sell real estate to other real estate investors.
Right.
And so we have a product called Real Protect, which is a licensed in 50 states, two commonwealths, and in Puerto Rico as well. And we insure 65,000 single-family rental houses across the country. That's somebody like you who might own three or four rental houses having a hard time getting insurance.
Sure, okay.
So that's another aspect. So in Gainesville, growing up, my parents had to do a little bit of everything to put bread on the table.
Mm-hmm, okay.
My dad sold insurance, did mortgages, built houses. My mother sold residential real estate. They both did insurance. My dad did a little bit of development, had one person who was our property management person at the time. And so we learned to do a little bit of everything. And from that, today, we still do a little bit of everything and look at opportunities, forming companies or shutting down companies and capitalizing on the area's growth.
And about what percentage between insurance and real estate?
Well, we did $675 million in business volume last year.
Okay.
About half of it was most likely insurance.
Okay.
On the insurance side, we also have an investment division and represent a number of investor clients.
Okay. And I guess I should say that, you know, being in a little bit of every piece of the field really gives you a good perspective of the whole entire process of buying and selling real estate, being insured, owning real estate, and then selling it again.
It does. It wears you out at times trying to. But my mother says that she trained us to be multiphasic.
Mm-hmm.
That is using the front side of your brain and the back side of the brain.
Okay.
Those people who can do their homework well in front of the TV, watching Lost in Space.
Lost in Space. I know Lost in Space. I watched it. Yeah, I watched it.
Yep. And doing it well.
Yeah.
That's being able to use two sides of your brain.
I got you.
Multifacing.
And so it also brings up the question during the recession. I know the real estate industry, you know, obviously went down like everybody else, but the insurance,
does it help
prop you up or?
It pays the bills.
Right.
Strategically, because we are a small family business,
right,
or a medium sized family business, we can turn on a dime.
Right.
So I had attended some conference in March of 2007.
Okay.
And my consultant there said there's going to be a crash like we've never seen before.
Mm-hmm.
March of 2007.
She would have told me, but yeah.
He said, if I were you, I would cut to the bone immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe him.
And you believed him.
I believed him. And so we cut about $1 million in operating expenses from our platform, shut two offices down, and by July 1, I went on a 30-day vacation, but I had cleaned up our portfolio and got rid of an entire level of management.
So how hard was it to convince people that this was the right thing to do? Because 2007, everybody was like, nothing can touch us right now. We're bulletproof.
I had come from that meeting and I had convened my board.
Uh-huh.
Now, we've been in business 91 years today.
Uh-huh.
My father said we've been through 13 downturns
mm-hmm.
and 13 upturns.
Mm-hmm.
Where you make money is on that downturn. I said, really? He said, that's when you hoard your cash to invest and you make money on the buy side. And so that's what we did. We pared down in anticipation of hoarding cash for a recession. And the signs were overbuilding in California, cab drivers buying and flipping houses left and right,
right.
in between their stops
sure.
For their cabs.
But you're having to sell that. That's not a tangible thing that we could see, really.
No, at that point you didn't.
And, right.
But basically I decided to become lean.
Right.
Become lean and mean by previously I had gotten rid of all the hobbyists. Those are the real estate agents.
Right, right.
That come in, read the newspaper, and talk on the Watts line to all of their Army buddies.
Sure.
I had done that in 2004. So I had pared ourselves down to real people selling real estate every single day.
Right.
In his full-time avocations. In August, I come back from vacation. It was a pre-planned vacation. I came back from vacation, and I set up an REO division.
Okay.
And ultimately,
already ready to.
We picked up one bank who was having difficulty.
Yeah.
And we ended up handling 47 banks, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, the fraud division of the FDIC. And that powered us through the recession. We actually made money all throughout the recession on the real estate side.
Okay.
As well as the insurance side.
That's fantastic. And I had heard that Norton was one of the ones that survived much better than a lot of people. I was going to ask you about that today, but I'm glad we got into that story because it was I mean in the real estate industry, I was in the construction industry and had a little construction company, and it took me until the end of 2008 to believe that we were really in knee deep in something. I had done everything right, and then I would have loved to have heard if that consultant, quite frankly, would have told me that. I probably would have laughed him off the stage.
Well,
and
he's
just
still
kept doing what I was doing.
And I still listen to him very intently.
I can see
about
that.
What's going on?
Yeah, that's great. So. Let me ask you a little bit about the Norton agency and the real estate, because you started in Gainesville and you stayed mostly north. Like I call it outside the Rubicon, just, you know, us here in the metro Atlanta area. When you get north, we don't think too much further outside of Hall County. Dawson County and up there. You guys have made it a strategy really to stay up there. As you've grown, you grew north. I mean, you've got some tentacles inside the perimeter, and I've seen you have some listings in there, but is this a strategy? What's the thinking behind, is it, hey, this is what we're going to, this is our wheelhouse. We're going to own this market rather than go play and be a smaller fish in a big pond, or I don't know. Maybe that's not the right way to put it. But
you're exactly right.
Okay.
We have decided to concentrate in our wheelhouse.
Right.
So when I went off to college, I worked my way through school, and my last job ended up with what's now CB Richard Ellis.
Mm-hmm.
And
okay.
I was in their research division. Mm-hmm. And Charlie Hendon and I worked together. He's Hendon Properties. He ought to have him come out here. He's a great retail developer in Atlanta.
Okay.
He and I worked in the research division, and I got hired by CB Richard Ellis. And remember, my family's business was only 17 people when I went off to college, and I went off to become the family builder. I have a degree in building construction from Georgia Tech.
Okay.
So I have a little bit of real estate, but I was going to build houses for them. I took this detour and stayed with CB for 9 mm-hmm. years. And in 1986, I had a small child in Atlanta, decided that my wife and I would raise our children back home. So we moved to Gainesville. My dad, by that time, his business was 80 people. Today, we're 315.
Okay.
He was primarily in the residential business, some development business, mm-hmm. and had really not a major impact on commercial. So I came to become general manager of the residential division and the commercial division. Now, our platform is primarily residential in Northeast Georgia, on both sides of the lake, all the way to the mountains, although I am licensed in North Carolina, South Carolina, Alabama, Tennessee, and Kentucky.
Okay.
Just because of certain clients. And then I went and started this commercial division. I took the principles mm-hmm. that I had learned with CB Richard Ellis and applied them to Gainesville. Now, you can't do big real estate in Gainesville, Georgia, but you can take those same principles of providing great service on the commercial side, providing mm-hmm. a higher level service. So we began providing the level of service that the major Atlanta companies did in our own marketplace.
Okay.
Now, we do dribble a little in the Atlanta area. We have some very large national clients that ask us to handle some things in the Atlanta, national and regional clients. We represent the United Methodist Conference on the sale of churches
okay.
north of Macon. We have major acreage customers that acreage listings in Bibb County and Putnam County. But I don't really concentrate on that. We have listings in today 59 counties in the state of Georgia.
Okay.
4 counties in South Carolina, 3 in North Carolina.
Okay.
I don't know that I have anything left in Alabama. But the idea is to become the major force for real estate in the mountain region.
In the mountain region. And you are.
Lakes and mountain region.
I mean, I say the Norton Agency when I talk to people, and they say, okay, the Norton Agency. And I say, you know, the yellow signs when you get up near the mountains. Oh, yeah, I see them all over the place. Sure. You definitely are the dominant force there. And so in that market, and it's like you say, it's residential. But I see big commercial tracks as well with your signs on there. And you've gotten in. What's the dichotomy?
The difference today,
yeah.
Fast forward, the difference today is about half of our business is commercial and acreage.
Okay.
And half of it is residential.
I got you.
I have 85 agents that sell residential. They're all full time.
Mm-hmm.
I have 30 commercial agents. And so they have a much higher volume, a much larger lead time for their deals. We have maybe 400 residential listings and over 1,200 acreage and commercial listings in the region.
So in North Georgia, if I'm thinking, if I want to go invest in some commercial property in North Georgia or something, you're the company I'm probably going to go to, right?
Absolutely.
I would guess, right? And so, you know, you know where the hot spots are. And so what's going on in North Georgia? Can you give us a little recap of maybe where some of the hot spots are? And I mean, it's hard to, I know Rome and we've got a lot of carpet. And that industry, the flooring industry, is doing very well up there. And There's a lot of tourism going on. Is there more tourism markets? I think there's some manufacturing. It may be too big a question to ask and squeeze into the show.
We'll take a stab at it.
Yeah,
we'll
for us in-towners over here.
Atlanta is growing. 65% on the north side of, if you draw a line through Atlanta, Interstate 20, 65% on the north side and 35% on the south. It continues to grow.
Yeah.
If you were to draw a line straight up Georgia 400 and then draw a line out Interstate 20, that wedge of Georgia represents about 47% of all new major job relocations and expansions in the entire state.
Okay.
In the entire state. So that transportation corridor up 85 on 316 on Interstate 20 in Covington and Conyers, that market there attracting people like Facebook and Baxter Pharmaceuticals, major within that wedge is
Now, does that include the Metro Atlanta area
that
as well?
That would include the Metro Atlanta area.
So if you're going from the epicenter of Midtown.
Straight up 400. And as a result of that, that is where the job-heavy growth. If you start to overlay the major national developers and their footprint for additional housing, it's also majority in that same footprint.
Sure, which makes sense.
So the opportunities are varied. There are industrial opportunities up 85. Jackson County's hot, but becoming hot is Banks and Franklin counties up the 85 corridor, up the 985 corridor. North of Gainesville, we're seeing tremendous activity. That's where the inland port is going to be relocated or being located there. That's going to bring businesses in and around the inland port that will ship their goods by rail to Savannah overnight. And then
So you say inland port. For those that don't know exactly what that means.
So the Georgia Ports Authority wants to increase their volume of activity in Savannah.
Okay.
A little bit in Brunswick, but at our Savannah port.
Right.
And as part of that, they have located inland ports. Rail centers.
Not a port like we would think of as water-based, but right, okay.
With huge cranes lifting off containers off of tractor trailers, putting them on rail cars, and then sending them overnight to Savannah.
Right.
And so there's one in the northwest outside of the Rome area. There is one in Cordele, and now one on the railroad going through Gainesville, just north of Gainesville.
And we had State Senator Brandon Beach on this show several months ago, and he was talking about, he's head of the Transportation Committee, and he was talking about the Savannah port and how it's grown to be one of the most important ports now in the whole Eastern Seaboard, and how they're about to dredge it, and it's the capacity is about to, I don't know if doubling is the right word, but it's already a huge port.
Tripling.
And so what that's going to do is, for one thing, the issue it's going to create is a whole lot more stuff coming from there. And he's saying they'd rather get more stuff on the rail, less stuff on the roads. To get to all these places, so these inland ports.
Absolutely. So the rail cars are going to be placed on the containers go off of the trucks that come to north of Gainesville. They go on a rail car going south and back. The materials, the raw materials for Kubota, for some of the other manufacturers, will come back on the rail cars coming back from Savannah to Gainesville.
Okay.
It is a two-way street, two-way railroad,
right?
Not necessarily street. It does pull traffic off of the major interstates 85 and 75.
And that's one thing they want to increase. So these inland ports are going to become even more and more important, in which they're going to provide a lot of jobs, right?
So there's a ripple effect. It provides some jobs, not very many on the actual port, the inland port. It's the businesses that desperately need to be near that.
I see.
And so a Kubota, which is one of the largest manufacturers in Hall County, they occupy 2.5 million square feet of industrial space. They also have some space that they warehouse over in Jackson County, and they make a lot of different products. Some of it machinery, some of it they're coming out with an ATV. They've just bought 300 more acres for an international testing center. Not quite sure what they're going to be testing, but they did buy 300 acres for a testing center.
Okay.
Huge employer. They need materials. They need raw materials. They need some parts that might be coming from South America, some of their plants to be assembled in the Gainesville area. And then they have a product that they sell overseas. They sell South America, was very thirsty for agricultural-based products, manufacturing products.
I see.
And then shipping to other countries.
So if you're in one of these areas in North Georgia and you've got an inland port, you've been fortunate enough, or blessed, as I should say, to get one of these inland ports there, which probably there was some infrastructure there to begin with, I'm assuming.
Railroad.
There's a railroad there, but this is going to be an economic development engine for your county, I would assume,
it really will.
Sort of a cash cow to some degree.
So Gainesville has always been known as a chicken capital of the world.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so one of the things that they do is export chicken.
Yep.
So they have apparently working out the final details that frozen chicken can arrive at the inland port in Gainesville by 6 p.m. And by 9 a.m. the next day, it will be on a boat in the Savannah Harbor.
Wow.
Now that's fast.
Yeah, that's fast.
And because of that, it becomes a logistics issue. That allows that a poultry industry can expand their production beyond their current radius of delivery with a truck.
And their customer base, too,
and their
probably.
Customer base.
That's wider. That's very interesting. It's fascinating. So one thing that you talked about, you know, so the ARC is basically predicting that we're going to have 2.5 million more people here. I was telling saying
at
that
least.
Earlier. At least. Okay. I mean, we're just, when you keep getting named best place to do business in the country, that's telling you you're doing something right. Businesses are coming. More jobs are coming.
So I went to Georgia Tech.
Yep.
I'm going to cite a Georgia Tech study. They said by 20.
I'm a Georgia guy, but I'll let you do it anyway.
Okay. Well, my parents both went to Georgia,
yeah.
But parents always want something better for their children than they had themselves.
Well, you're not wrong. My son, I've brainwashed him into Georgia, and he's really an engineer, so I'm trying to pump the brakes on that whole thing a little bit. I mean, you can get a good job, I hear, coming from Georgia Tech, but, you know.
Right, right.
We digress.
We digress.
Yeah, yeah.
Little sidebar.
Yeah.
So where were we?
So 2.5 million people.
So 2.5 million. Yeah. Georgia Tech study.
Georgia Tech study says yeah.
In a study that they published about 5 years ago,
yep.
That by 2050, mm-hmm. megalopic Atlanta mm-hmm. will be 12.5 million people.
Mm-hmm.
And the Atlanta influence, whether it's city or influence, will be from Greenville South, from Chattanooga South, and Macon North.
So they'll almost be like Chattanooga and Greenville almost be like suburbs of Atlanta.
2050.
By 2050.
And so the 2.5 million, you could probably stretch that out. If Atlanta is somewhere around 6.5 million, we're going to end up being a community of about 12.5 million people.
So my question to you, Frank Norton, is where are we going to put everybody? Because, I mean, are people going to be willing – how far north or out into the suburbs are people going to be willing to go? Or are they just going to have to start relocating jobs out there? Because we're built out. I'm in Roswell, and we're largely built out. There's only one way to go, and that's
up.
Yeah, and there's not an. I can just tell you after seeing the most recent election here in Roswell that there's not a lot of appetite for that right now. How far out are people going to be willing to drive, or how's this going to play out? Where are we going to put 2.5 million people?
So you're going to see tremendous growth along the major corridors.
Yeah.
The major corridors of 85, 985, 316, 575. And then the density will be 1.5 miles to 2 miles in either direction on either side of the pipeline. That's where your heaviest density. There's still going to be a very strong amount of gentleman farms or land with or houses with acreage. Look around us. There's land everywhere. It may not be in downtown city of Roswell or downtown city of Alpharetta, but they've started to densify downtown, midtown Atlanta. Look at all the stuff across from Georgia Tech.
Absolutely.
And so you are going up. It's going to require us to change our prejudice against density.
Right.
Change our prejudice against house size.
Right.
Of material choice and manufacturing type. So we're going to see more modular, more componentized or industrialized construction out further out because there's also a shortage of labor. We have a shortage of labor and
right.
The Kubotas and all of the other manufacturers are gobbling up the labor, which is going to dwindle the pool of construction labor. And so I look in the mountains and there's tons of land.
Yeah.
Tons of
land. Up there, there's tons. But are people going to be going out that far?
You start to see, yes.
I mean, you know, yeah.
Yes. And it's going to be interesting. I think that the automatic car, the automotive industry is also going to change how we carpool and how we drive. And it's also starting to help us rethink, do we need a two-car garage? Are we going to need a two-car garage 2 years, 10 years from now? When the family has one car and everything else, you're being picked up in a computerized car that's carrying you down to Gwinnett County to work.
And maybe there's 10 other people in there with you.
And there may be
10
other people in that car.
So I just saw, I was reading about, I didn't follow to see what happened with it, but Dawson County was proposed, not Dawson County, but a developer was proposing to Dawson County, their Avalon recently. I didn't see if that did that pass. I don't know if that passed or not, but
it was tabled.
It was tabled. Okay, but
I think I know the project and it was tabled.
Okay,
it's still maybe back to the drawing board.
Okay,
but Dawson County within that mile and a half from 400 still has a lot of developable land.
Sure, I mean
and
that's
this is a tract of land that assembled is about 700-800 acres.
Well, it had a huge office component.
It did have a huge,
which
office
made me. Component. I'm always a big fan of more office, but. It made me think they had to have had a headquarters or something, but that's a whole nother somebody moving into the area. But that would have been a major change for Dawson County to have something. Maybe I haven't been there in long enough time, but
Dawson County is a community of about 22,000 people,
right? With a very nice outlet mall there,
with a great outlet mall that,
for them
that drives tax dollars from Gwinnett, Fulton, and DeKalb County. To build the Dawson County school system.
That's right.
So you start to look at where the SPLOST dollars are. Only about 8% of the tax dollars in that mall are from residents of Dawson County. So they've got a huge windfall.
Yep.
If you look at the growth of 400 since 1978, when we started to see the road develop, there were major industrial or office purchases along the barren Georgia 400, which didn't go anywhere because it went to Dahlonega. And at that time, that wasn't anywhere.
Right.
It didn't even go that far. It went to Dawson County. And you saw a company, there was a hospital computer company called HBO, buy a large tract of land at Haynes Bridge. And then Cousins Properties and a group of joint ventures bought this huge tract of land, 700-800 acres, in the middle of nowhere on Haynes Bridge to develop what? A mall?
Yep.
And then you saw Siemens locate a major headquarters. You saw Kimberly and Clark buy a piece of property in 1979 or maybe 1980 for their headquarters in the middle of nowhere on Holcomb Bridge Road.
Yep.
They paid $33,000 an acre.
Oh, you're kidding.
For that piece of property. I know.
You still remember that.
I still remember that. Our brokerage company handled that sale, bought 100 acres of about a $3 million sale.
They're still there. One of our biggest employers in Roswell. Yeah.
In the middle of nowhere.
Yep.
So now what we have is that next generation as office users are looking to be closer to workers or potential labor bases, then you're going to see the undeveloped exits in Forsyth and Dawson become major corporate campuses, just as State Farms is, just as Siemens is, and just as moving up Georgia 400. Now, are you going to get an Avalon way up there? Probably not anytime soon.
Right.
But we do have developers looking at a footprint, much like Windward did, the mobile land company did, when they purchased that land in the late 1970s and said, envision all of this farmland as a major office relocation. Everybody thought they were nuts.
Yeah.
Absolutely nuts. And look at what Windward is today.
So I didn't want to brag when you first got on here, but I am the self-proclaimed keeper of the history of economic development for North Fulton.
Oh, good for you.
Yes. I claim it because nobody's one-upped me yet, but I haven't told it to you yet. But I have a question for you, because one of the things I can't find is somehow in Alpharetta, they were blessed with that fiber optic cable. They were the most connected city in the country for a brief period of time in the 1990s. And that's what drove a lot of that. And I felt like all the right people. I cannot find out who was it that made the decision. Must have been somebody at the state level that decided we're going to put some fiber.
Somebody must have lived in Crabapple.
Yeah, so that's it. I'm just going to say it. They were blessed with fiber optic cable, and out of it popped all these data centers. Yeah.
Well, from the data centers,
thought I'd try.
Those technological advances really become a catalyst for major development.
That's right.
I'll cite another one. In 1984, 85 or 86, mm-hmm. Bell South, AT&T, or whoever was at that time, decided they would merge and build a large area network. At the time, Gainesville and Lake Lanier was a long-distance telephone call.
Okay.
And sometime about that period of time, Lake Lanier was merged. The 770 and the 404 area codes were merged so that calling the two was no longer a long-distance phone call. So we began seeing captains of industry buy or remodel their lake house, live on Lake Lanier, because it was a local telephone call on Lake Lanier to call to their office in Atlanta, Georgia. Just a little bit of change in technology can change everything. And I appreciate the Alpharetta story.
Yeah.
Fast forward, now there's some bills to provide internet, high-speed internet service to the rural areas of Georgia.
Right.
And if we're ever going to create a balanced Georgia, and I don't know that we'll ever be able to create a balanced Georgia, but if we can move toward that, we have got to get high-speed internet service in Dublin, in Vidalia, in Valdosta, in the small and the medium-sized towns, but also in the towns in between.
See, from where I am, I didn't even know that high-speed internet wasn't available in a lot of those parts. So I know that the state just approved the telecommunications companies, given almost free rein to go put up 5G wherever they see fit. Much of the chagrin of some of the local cities who are trying to get some sort of protections in there, but I imagine that'll have a similar effect maybe on the in-town ones. But when we say you don't have high-speed internet, are you talking we just don't have the cable, we don't have the infrastructure?
You have
internet
deserts, dry internet deserts.
That is impossible to imagine for anybody in the metro Atlanta area. I'm just to know that there's a place where you have an internet desert.
So I'll give you we still have some cell phone deserts in the state. My dad has a house in Sky Valley, which is north of Clayton, and you can't get a cell signal in Sky Valley.
Okay.
So houses languished. And they put a cell tower
there. Sounds like a great place to vacation.
So they put a cell tower there. And now the houses are selling to Atlanta folks because you got a signal.
Right.
Now what we've got to do is we need the 5G. And sooner or later we're going to need 6 and 7 and 8 and 20G, whatever else they come up with. But here's an idea that I'm hearing some state legislatures in. We already have a pipeline. We already have pipelines through the state. Use the right-of-way of 85. Use the right-of-way of 75. Use the right-of-way of 80, of 120, or Interstate 20. Of 575. Use those as the major connecting points and then allow the cities that are close by to quickly connect and pay the connection into that pipeline.
It's a trunk branch kind of method.
We already own the right-of-way.
Right.
The state already owns the right-of-way. So let's blanket the state with major fiber optic cables in the existing highway right-of-way.
So we're going to see density push further and further out into the further and further out. You know, the Rubicon's going to move. It's going to continuously move further north, right? It was, when I was growing up, it was pretty much right somewhere in Alpharetta, in my mind. If Forsyth County, Lake Lanier, you said it was a long-distance call. Well, it felt like a long-distance drive back in those days coming up from Roswell. Today, you get on 400, it's quick and easy jump up the road. So we're going to be seeing a lot more high-density moving out into the country, I guess, near the mountains. We're going to see them treaded. They're going to have the foresight of some of our folks here in the metro area didn't have back when development was going on. We didn't have the community development tools and expertise that's available today. Some of our planning, you know, could have been a little bit better. And believe me, we hear about it all the time. I'm an optimist. To me, there's a lot of places in this country that don't have a traffic problem and they wish they did. What trends, I guess, should we be paying attention to? Now we're about to wrap this up because we've been going for a little while. But what trends in just the real estate market here in the metro Atlanta area? You know, what do you see? I know the inventory is still low on it. To me, I see it as inventory looks low in the metro area under $400,000 range. And I'm a mortgage banker. It's very hard. You're usually competing with people in that range. In the over $500,000, it's kind of the opposite. you have that time, you can actually put in a low ball offer and have a chance of getting it picked up. Whereas if you're under $300,000 or lower, there ain't no low balling.
You have about a 13-minute supply.
Yes. Yeah. That's 13 minutes. We're
13
down
minutes.
To. 13 okay. Minutes. So what do you see? How do you see the market? Where are we going?
So I think the market, first, we are going to see sometime in the next 3 years, mm-hmm. some sort of market correction. I don't call it a downturn, but I think some sort of market correction.
Okay.
The South, Atlanta, North Georgia, most likely won't have as severe as one as in other areas of the country. We have very low inventory of houses. We've not had overbuilding in houses. We have strong job numbers, and we have a climate that still people want to retire here.
Right.
And so from that standpoint, and we have a good healthcare system, we have an improving education system, and you can overlay that and a quality of life.
Right.
What I have concern with is affordability.
Right.
Of our challenges.
That's a constant theme on this show, isn't it, John Ray?
Is affordability.
Yep.
Houses under $250,000 are absent in the marketplace and nobody wants to build them.
Right.
Land continues to go up in value. New construction today is as cheap as it ever will be. Let me explain that.
Before you do, let me just say, you said nobody wants to build under $200,000.
A builder doesn't want to build it because
he's not going to make money.
He's not going to make any money.
So it's not that
he can't buy a lot.
Yeah.
He can't put the house on the ground. He can't do all of the regulatory issues and make a profit. He would rather take that same amount of time and effort in building a $350,000 or $400,000 house for the same amount of time and effort.
And I just wanted to clarify that, because I know a lot of people say these builders, they only want to build the expensive stuff. Why don't they build more affordable housing? It's an economics thing. If they could make money on it, believe me, they probably would, because there's so much demand for it. So sorry.
So why is housing never going to be any cheaper than it is today?
Right.
We've burned through all of the foreclosed lots.
Yep.
They're in somebody's hands.
Okay.
There is absolutely no market and no overhang of a market for foreclosed houses. We don't have predatory lending any longer, really. We don't have that crazy lending climate that we had in 2005 and 6 and
right.
7.
Right.
So we're not going to get those back. Labor is such a short supply. If there is a framer making $17 an hour on a house in Roswell, next year he's not going to want to take a pay cut to $12. He's probably going to want an increase
right.
to $19. Construction costs, material, timber is roughly flat. Concrete
right.
is up. Parts that are coming from China will have a tariff on them most likely and are getting more and more expensive. And so from a construction parts and material standpoint, that's going to continue to increase.
So the problem's going to get worse is what you're saying.
And lastly is regulatory. Mm-hmm. I don't see a single government wanting to roll back anything for affordable housing. They talk out of both sides of their mouth.
Mm-hmm.
They want the affordable housing, but oh yes, we don't want 1,200 square foot houses, and we don't want those folks. We want affordable housing for these kind of people. We want affordable housing that is $400,000 and $500,000. That's not affordable. I look at affordability or attainability. Is a teacher married to a teacher?
That's right.
What can they afford? And they today can afford somewhere in the 225, depending upon school system, 225 to 275 on the high end.
Mm-hmm.
Are we building that product?
No.
Or are we forcing our teachers to live three counties over to commute to our school in Roswell?
Right.
Or confine themselves into a rental house and delay them or deny them the ability of buying a house.
So it's got to come from, and I talked about this with Egbert as well, what's the solution? And it's got to come from regulatory. So city governments, land's going to be what's going to be. The land costs. So rather than the city government using taxpayer dollars to buy a whole bunch of land and give it to a developer to build affordable housing, their tools are to allow them higher densities on those properties so they can pack more housing onto it,
so,
or lower the regulatory fees, maybe tax abation, which doesn't do a whole bunch, but yeah.
So I built 10 houses last year.
Okay.
And I'm a statistician and a nut for numbers.
Yep.
I dissected every penny that we spent on those houses. 37% of the house cost was a 37% of the house cost was attributed to a government influence.
No kidding.
Impact fees, yep. Delay of because of zoning or water control, fire codes, and I'm all for public safety. But I grew up in a bedroom that had a outlet on each of the four walls. Now I have to put one every 6 feet. And every 6 feet does allow me to not have as many extension cords. But every 6 feet means that for that electrical outlet in Atlanta, Georgia, it's somewhere between $55 and $65 a square each.
Okay.
And for those houses, I had to do 13.
Right. Okay.
So it starts to add up to real money. The city of Gainesville now and the county has just now required that we can no longer have pull-down string light fixtures in a closet. Now, they make me have a closet for a bedroom, and that's okay.
Yep.
But I can't have a pull-down string there. I have to have a switch on the side. I'm not quite sure why, but because of that, that is only $160 times the number of closets I have. And so we right. need – the governments need to strip clean their regulations. Perhaps we have regulations that are codes for affordable housing tied to home price.
Sure.
So we have a set of regulations still providing safety.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm all 100% for safety.
Sure.
For houses that are built and sold in Atlanta, Georgia for under $300,000.
So a different set of regulations or fees.
Or apartments under right. $1,400 in Atlanta, Georgia. And right. it'd be a different matrix in another community. But
sure.
you are – and the developer pledges that he'll keep those at that level or below that level for a period of time.
Okay.
But we're going to have to strip every single thing. The other thing we have to do – is that for every regulation that is being considered by the city of Alpharetta or Milton or Johns Creek or whatever, they need to look at the unintended consequence against affordable housing. If I pass this, right. what is the effect on affordable housing? If I pass water control, if I have to have a settlement pond and it's of this size and this caliber and I now have to have an engineer, what is the cost there? So I was speaking to a surveyor, longtime surveyor in Forsyth County.
Yep.
He used to do a subdivision plat for a developer, 50 lots, and he used to charge $7,000.
Okay.
And today, because of the regulatory issues that are in Forsyth County, he charges $77,000.
Holy mackerel. Okay. And which gets to – so, yeah, I mean The unintended consequence. So now the cities are going to have to pay more for their police and fire because they can't afford to live there. They're going to have to pay somebody to drive. And I told the story when Egbert was here where we were in a restaurant and our food was taken 45 minutes because they couldn't afford to pay a chef enough to want to drive all the way into Alpharetta, you know, to get something to eat. The teachers are going to, we're going to have to pay our teachers more to want to drive all the way in here. So there's going to be costs associated with it. You know,
and the major industries yeah. may end up reverting because of capturing, because of their ability to capture employees. To go back to what maybe the modern version of a mill village,
right?
Roswell was a mill village.
Yes, it was.
And so, and those folks were captured for the Roswell mill,
right?
And what that provided is that the company store, the company. Provided.
Yep.
The company provided a church. They had community centers, and they were tied to that community and tied to their employer. And the employer should pay standard rates, shouldn't discount because they are providing housing. But to capture that recruiting incentive, it may no longer be health benefits and retirement benefits, is that we are providing quality housing.
So you may see a company come in and then – also
we're already
provide,
seeing it.
Albert, here and in Georgia?
In Georgia. We're already seeing it. Where a company locates in Franklin County and rents a motel to house their temporary workers until housing is built for them, or build an apartment complex for their workers. We're already starting to see that on the higher levels. And so the conversation is and we're seeing in California where Google and Facebook and Switch and all of those companies are so stressed on housing that they're starting to become housing. Housing is part of their overall benefits.
Well, Frank, I cannot thank you enough. We've been going here for quite a while. And so I think I'm getting a sign from my producer that we need to wrap this thing up over there. But we could go on and on. Like I said, just a wealth of information. I can't thank you enough for coming on the show.
My pleasure.
I could have sat here and talked for another couple hours. Just getting started here. But thank you so much for doing what you do. Thank you for the information you provide over the years. And thank you so much for coming on the show. Look forward to seeing you soon.
Great. Look forward to it.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, that is Frank Norton Jr. If you're thinking of moving anywhere in North Georgia, they are the group to go see. Look for the big yellow sign or the little yellow signs. My name is Jeff Smith, and you've been listening to ATL Developments with Jeff Smith. We hope to see you next month, and we'll talk to you soon. Thank you very much.